We're holding on page 28 in Eruvin, Ois Chof Dalet. Continuing on the topic of, we were talking about the importance of learning Torah and the importance of the mentality that a person has to have going along with it, that he has to be, he can't be a Baal Gaiva, and so forth. So now further in this topic, Amar Rav Masna, Mai Dichtiv Umi Midbar Matana. Interesting that Rav Masna is the one saying a drasha on the word Matana, but anyway. But the pasuk describes in Parshas Chukas, you have the travels of the well that the Be'er Shel Miriam that went with the Jewish people, and so it says from the midbar to Matan. So the simple sense you would say it means the name of a place, or you could understand that it means from the midbar it was given to them. The well was given to them as a Matan. But the Gemara finds a different drasha in it. In Mason Adam Atzmei Kan Midbar Hazef, a person makes himself like a desert. Called Doshin Boy, where everybody steps on it and it's hefker for everybody, Talmudim Eskayim B'yadei, then his learning will be preserved in his hand and he'll be able to remember to his learning. In all these things, by the way, where we had the expression each time, the Gemara's expression, Talmudim Eskayim B'yadei, Beni Hayada makes the point also, it means not just that he'll remember his learning, but he'll actually be able to fulfill it in practice. Like we say in davening, Lumud V'lamed Lishmer V'lasei, says, well, yeah. Being lav, and if not, if he doesn't act like a midbar in Talmudim, eskayim b'yadei, then his learning will not be preserved in his hand. So that's only midbar. A person has to be like the desert, and then he'll get the Torah as a matana from Hashem. So in this connection, the Gemara tells a story. Rava Breid Rav Yosef Bar Choma. This is the regular Rava throughout Shas. Usually we just call him Rava, but here because further on in the story, Rav Yosef, his Rebbe, calls him Rava by Rav Yosef Bar Choma. Then here the Gemara introduces him by his full name. Anyway, Havile Milsil Rav Yosef Bahadei. There was something that Rav Yosef was upset with him about. The Gemara tells the whole story in Nedarim. Kitzur Amai says Rava had a Shaila. He sent the question to Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef sent back an answer based on a Mishnah over there. Rava says that what Rav Yosef answered is not really what I needed to know. I knew that already. I was actually asking something slightly different. So Rav Yosef was offended by that. It sounded like a little bit of a lack of derech eretz for Rava to speak that way. Like, I know that already. So kad mota mala yom kippuri. So when it came erev yom kippur, Omar. So Rava said, Ezel afayse, let me go and appease him. Let me go ask him mechila. Why do you wait till erev yom kippur? I guess for pashtus, you could say the rest of the year he's busy teaching his talmudim and being the rav of the town and whatever. He doesn't really have time. Anyway. Ozel, so he went to Rav Yosef's house. Ashkechel, the reason why the Gemara is bringing this story is because, again, we're going to have the same drosha about Midbar Matana and continue darshaning the pasuk. So Ozel, Ashkechel, the Shamed, Kamozig Lekosa. Rava went there to Rav Yosef's house and he found that Rav Yosef Shamash was mixing for him a cup of wine. As we know throughout Shas, their wine was strong or syrupy or whatever it was exactly, and you had to dilute it with water to make it drinkable. Omar Lay, so Rava says to the Shamash, have lead to Imzigle Anna, give me the cup and I'll pour it for him. This way also he would have the schus of being the Shamash as Rebbe. Yohav Lay, so the Shamash gave it to him, Mozagle, and Rava mixed the wine to give to Rav Yosef. Now Rav Yosef was blind, so he couldn't see that Rava was there. But Kadtame, when he tasted the wine, Omar, he says, Domi hai mziga, the mziga, the rovet braid of Yosef Bachoma, this way of mixing wine resembles the way that my Talmud, rovet braid of Yosef Bachoma, mixes it. We find in various places in Shas that Rava used to mix his wine with more water than most people did. Usually the proportion was one part wine to two parts water. Rava used to do one part wine to three parts water. So it was a more pleasant drink, I guess. Anyway, so I recognize this is the way Rava pours it. Omale, I know who. So Rava says, yes, that's me. Omale, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Loi tesev akarach, don't sit down on your feet. Meaning, in other words, it can mean they used to sit cross-legged then. So it means literally don't sit down on your legs, or it could mean don't sit, but rather stay standing on your feet. Adam afraushusli lahani kroy, until you explain me the following psukim. Which the point is going to be the beginning with this pasuk about Midbar Matana. The point is that a person has to be an Adam in order to learn and absorb Torah properly. And Rav Yosef wants Rava to internalize that message, that he should realize in the future that he's going to be a manig Yisrael. He needs to be careful with this midah. So my distivum midbar matona. So that pasuk says from the desert, from the desert matona. Umi matona nachliel. Umi nachliel bomos. Umi bomos hagah. So in the simple sense, it means these are the various places where the Jews traveled after, you have the whole story where the well disappeared after Miriam passed away, and then it was brought back in Moshe's chus, and it went with them from one place to another. That's the simple meaning of it, but what's the drasha of it? In particular, Marsha in Nedarim points out, the point of the question is, in particular, why Nachli El? If it just means that it went with them to the valley, Nachal means like a valley or a wadi, one of these places where water flows when it's the rainy season, but otherwise it's dry, then it should say Matona or Matona HaNachal or something like that. Why Nachli El? So therefore, we understand that all of it is there for a drosha. Omale, so Rava tells him, Im mesim odim asatzme kamidbar azeh, like a masnev drosha, if a person makes himself like a midbar, shall call doshin oisar boy, everybody tramples on the midbar, tura nitna loy matona, then the tura will be given to him as a gift, shenema umi midbar matona. The kivin shenitna loy, this is by the way, we have in this week's Pirkei Avos, where it brings also, called misha oisik, the Talmud Torah, I raise misala, shenema, there it just stops at umatona nachliel, nachliel bomos, here you have the continuation of it, which is that he has to be careful once he's oil of gula, like it says over there in the Mishnah, then he has to be careful. Anyway, the kivin shenitna loy Torah matona, once the Torah is given him as a gift, Rava continues the Jerusha, Nichaloi Keo, then Hashem makes him his heritage. Hashem makes that person his inheritance. Shenemu Matona Nachaliel. That's what it means, that from the gift, it becomes Nachaliel. He becomes the inheritance of Hashem. The Kivin Shen Nichaloi Keo, Oilo Ligdula. And then the result is he goes up to and achieves greatness. Shenemu Nachaliel Bomos, where Bomos means high places. But the imagus daita, but then if as a result of that he becomes a gas ruach, he becomes proud of himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mashpilo, then Hashem knocks him down, shenem, we bomis hagai, as the next pasuk continues, from bomis to the valley. So he winds up deep in a valley. In fact, in that Gemara in Nedarim, it gives another point over there, it continues to darshan the rest of the pasuk where it says v'nishkofa apnei ayishimon, that it means he not only gets thrown down, he gets banged down, etc. Here the Gemara leaves that out. But then Rava finishes off, if the person does tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu magbiyoi, then Hashem will lift him back up. Shenemar, as you have a different pasuk. Now this pasuk is not at all in context of the other ones, the pasuk from Yeshaya, but it says, kol gei yinosei, every valley will be lifted high, la'asid lovely. So it means, in other words, Marsha explains over there, it means kol gay, even if the person is down in the valley, down in the dumps because of what he did wrong, because we said he was megas daita, nevertheless, he still has, he's not a goner. If he does tshuva, then Hashem will lift him back up as well. So that was the drasha. And again, the point was that Rabbi Yosef wanted Rava to say that over so he should internalize that message for himself. Continues the Gemara further on this topic. Amar Rav Huna, my dichtiv, a pasuk in Tehillim, chayos chayoshvu ba, yur chaya. Now, sometimes chaya can actually mean a group of soldiers or something. And in the simple sense of the pasuk, that's what it means. It means your nation, your group. Anyway, yoshvu ba, they lived in it, in Eretz Yisrael. Tochen b'tevoscha la'oni alikim, you Hashem prepare in your goodness for the poor one. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, that whole kapitel, part of it is talking about Matan Torah, part of it is talking about Kriyas Yamsuf, and in general talking about how Hashem did so much good for us Jewish people and settled us in Eretz Yisrael. But since the previous psukim, since a few psukim earlier, it mentions Matan Torah, Zes Sinai, Mitnei Lekim Alekei Yisrael. So therefore, the Gemara wants to darshan that this pasuk is also referring to the attitude that a person needs in order to learn Torah. So again, if a person makes himself like a chaya, like a wild animal, that it just claws or kills its prey and eats it right away, or others say that it makes it filthy with dirt and then it eats it. So Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means an animal, a wild animal, as soon as it kills, it eats. It's not finicky, it's not a gourmet, it doesn't need to prepare it nicely or whatever, it just eats it right there on the spot. Or the second explanation is, and the second word, shemasrachas vaycheles, means that it'll eat its prey, even though it's filthy with dirt and whatever. The point being, in other words, if a Talmud Chacham is like that, as far as that he doesn't care about the quality of his food or whatever, he'll just eat and not worry whether the food is in good shape or nicely prepared or whatever. That's Rashi's first explanation, but he doesn't like it so much because he says the fact is we do find in many places in Gemara, we had it in Shabbos, for example, that Talmid Chachamim are careful about their dress and about their deportment. They don't stam eat. They don't stam eat like common people do without worrying whether it's clean or whatever. So therefore, and then their clothes, they're careful to make sure it's clean. So Rashi prefers the second explanation, which is that a wild animal, as soon as it kills, it eats. The same way a Talmid Chacham, as soon as he learns something, and further on also in the Gemara, which we'll learn next week, Bez Hashem, we're also going to have a piece where the Gemara compares learning a piece of Torah to capturing a wild animal or a bird or something. So therefore, if right away when he kills it, as soon as he has it available to him, he right away reviews it. So that would be like the animal, like the wild animal that eats as soon as it kills. Or masrachas means menabo atzme al dibre Torah. He's willing to set aside his dignity for the sake of Torah. For example, he'll ask a question in the Mes Medrash, even though he knows people may laugh at him, that it seems like such an elementary question, and he's not worried about that because he wants to learn. Anyway, so if a person acts like that, Talmudim Eskayim B'Yodei, then his learning will be preserved in his hand. V'im lav ein Talmudim Eskayim B'Yodei, and if not, then his learning will not be preserved in his hand. Maosha says we can still justify Rashi's first explanation. It's true, like Rashi says, Talmid Chachamim are particular about how they dress and how they act and how they eat and so on and so forth. Nevertheless, though, as the Gemara is going to talk about in a little bit, sometimes you have a Talmid Chacham is so crazy with love over Torah that he forgets all the gashmias around him, as the Gemara is going to give examples soon. So therefore, at a time like that, then yeah, he might not worry about whether the food is decent quality or whatever, and he might just eat because he's not really so interested in that. He's more interested in Torah. So therefore, that could still work with Rashi's first explanation. Anyway, continues Rav Huna, v'im oisa odim kain, if a person then acts like that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu oisa lo suda ba'atzmoy, then Hashem will make him a suda ba'atzmoy, which Marsha says can mean two meanings. It can mean that Hashem personally will prepare for him the suda, or it can mean Hashem will prepare him a suda all by himself, meaning a suda that's special for him. Shenemar, as that same pasuk continues, Tochen b'tevoscha l'oni alikim, you Hashem prepare with your goodness for the poor person. So again, it can mean that Hashem himself does it personally, because the word alikim, otherwise, Marasha says, is extra in the pasuk. It can also mean that since it's l'oni b'loshin yachid, where after all, before it's talking about yoshvu ba, the first part of the pasuk, is in l'oshin rabim, so therefore that would imply that now we're talking about something special that's given to the Talmid Chacham personally. Okay, so we'll continue that next time, I think, and we'll start on Yechezkel now. So there is, of course, we know during the 3 weeks we're supposed to learn in Yonim of Beis Abchira. So previously, a couple of years back, we did Hilchos Beis Abchira. So this year I thought we'll do the part of Yechezkel. I have, Bez Hashem, there should be coming to me soon a big poster of the layout of the third Beis Hamikdash that we'll be able to refer to when we learn it. But for now we'll just have to do with verbal descriptions. I did want to actually before we the part where he talks about the third Beis Hamikdash begins at the beginning of Perek Mem, but I wanted actually to start a couple of psukim earlier and read off and talk about a little bit the end of Perek Lamed Tes, which talks about in a few words, it tells us a lot about what Golos and what Geula is all about. So previously in that perek, Yechezkel was talking about Milchemes Gog and Magog. We read part of that perek as the Haftorah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos, but it says the war of Gog and Magog is going to be then. So then, so Yechezkel summarizes, he says how they're going to get their punishment, and they're going to be, their dead bodies are going to be eaten up by wild animals and so forth. And then Yechezkel says, Menasati es kvoridi bagoyim, I'll put my glory among the nations. All the nations will see my punishment that I did, and my hand and my power that I put against them. The Jewish people will know that from that time and on that I am Hashem, their God, even though all the years in Golos, sometimes you have people wondering. Now Hashem says, I'll make it clear. And he continues, the Goyim will also realize, Why did the Jewish people go into Golus? Because of their Averis, because they lied and they trespassed against me. They will realize, Rashi says, not that I didn't save the Jewish people from Golus all this time because I didn't have the power to, but because of their Averis, therefore, Va'aster, but he continues, Va'aster, ponai mehem, I hid my face from them, Va'etnem yad sareim, I put them in the hands of their enemies, Va'yiplu b'cherev kulam, and all, or practically all of them, fell by the sword. I think, by the way, there's something in this connection. I haven't seen anybody make this connection, but you have in Sefer Yoshua, when it talks about the wars where they went to conquer Eretz Yisrael, in one of the early wars over there, it has an expression that they're fighting against the Goyim, Vayiplu kulam lefi cherev ad tumam. They all fell by the sword until they were all gone, except for a couple of stragglers managed to get away. So now you have the Psukim in Parshas Maaseh where Hashem warns if you leave the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael and you start learning from their ways, you know, Bahoya Klasha Dimisi, etc., then what was supposed to happen to them will happen to you. And here we have the result of it, by Yupul Bacher of Kolam. You think about it also, by the way, you think of how many Jews there really ought to be nowadays in the world. Beryl Wine has a vote about it. He says, at the time of that, at around the time of Churban Bayis Sheni, there were about 10 million Jews in the world. You can figure out from Roman government statistics and from things that Josephus says or whatever. And Lahavdil, there were about 10 million Chinese. How many Chinese are there now? About a billion. How many Jews are there in the world? Kam 15 million, Kain Yerbu. That's the Vayupla Bacher of Kolam. So he continues, Kitum Osim Bishem Sisi Oisem. I acted with them according to their tumah and according to their rebellious Averis, Va'aster Ponemehem, and I hid my face from them. So that's what Golus has been. Lochain, but now Hashem says, therefore, Koyaman Hashem Alekim, Ata Oshiv Shvus Yaakov, now I will return the captivity of Yaakov, Rihamti Kol Beis Yisrael, I'll have Rachmanus on the entire Jewish people, Vikinesi, Vishem Kodshi, I'll be zealous for my holy name, meaning that there shouldn't be a Chilul Hashem anymore of the fact that the Jewish people are in Golus. And continues, v'nosu es klimasam v'es komala mashamualubi, they will nosu, which nosu has two meanings. It can mean to bear, it can also mean, Rashi says two meanings, it can mean to bear, it can also mean to be forgiven. So they will bear all of their embarrassment, or they will be forgiven for all of their embarrassment, v'es komala mashamualubi, for all of their treachery, that the Jewish people were treacherous against Hashem, v'shivta malad masam lavetach, men machrid, when Mashiach comes, and we're sitting in our land securely, and nobody there to make us afraid. So either Yechezkel was saying, at that point, we're going to have a tremendous guilty conscience that the Eibishter is doing so much good for us, and how did we treat Hashem all these years? Or it can mean that Hashem will forgive us for all of that, so that we don't have to suffer that embarrassment. It can be both, really, because you have a Gemara that says that a person being embarrassed for his Averis itself is part of his Kapara. Anyway, he continues, B'shoivu v'oysa min ha'amim, when I restore them from the nations, v'kibatz di'oysa ma'autzes evehem, and I gather them all from the lands of their enemies, v'nikdashti bom la'ene ha'goyim rabim, and I'm made, there's a kiddush Hashem through them in front of all the many nations, v'yodu ki ani Hashem alikeyem, then they will know that I am Hashem their God, v'ha'gloisi oysa ma'agoyim, I was their God when I took them in golus among the nations, and also v'chinastim alad mosim, and also now when I'm gathering them back to their land, and I will not leave any of them behind there. When we say you have the popular song, no Jew will be left behind, this is where it comes from. And he finishes up, this that before there was a Hester upon him, and that's what drives everything of Golus. Hashem says, I won't hide my face from them anymore. I'll pour out my spirit of Ruach HaKodesh on the entire Jewish people. This is what Hashem promises, and this is what's going to be. Now with that, we have a good introduction to Yechezkel, who's going to describe to us the third Beis Hamikdash that we're going to come to and daven and bring karbonos in and so forth at that time. So he starts off, Be'esrim b'chomish shana l'galusenu, in the 25th year of our galus. Now Yechezkel was one of the people taken into galus together with Yechoniah 11 years before the Churban Bayis Rishon. So everything, almost everything in Sefer Yechezkel, he dates to that Golus. So here also, it's 25 years after that Golus. Berosh Hashana ba'osav haChodesh, and Rosh Hashana on the 10th of the month. Now Rashi points out, based on Gemara and Erechin, that Rosh Hashana, what year do you have that Rosh Hashana is on the 10th of the month, Yom Kippur, is a Yovel year. A Yovel year, the special dinim of Yovel, that you learn that all the Avodim, Ivim go free, and that fields return to their owners, all of that takes place on Yom Kippur. So Yechezkel is letting us know that this nevuah that we saw, the third base of Mikdash, took place during a Yovel year. ba'arba esu eshan on Yom Kippur of a Yovel year, ba'arba esu eshan achar shehuksa year, in the 14th year after the city had been struck and destroyed. So in other words, it was 14 years after the Churban. The calculation in a nutshell is, so actually when Yechezkel begins his Sefer, he begins Vayhi b'shloshim shana, and Rashi explains over there that it means that it was 30 years since the previous Yovel. So what happened was you had, usually by the way, Yovel we know only exists when most of the Jewish people are living in Eretz Yisrael. So ever since the Golos of Shev, of Reuven and Gad, Chatzi Shevet Menashe, back in the time of Sancheiriv, over 100 years before this, then Yovel ceased to exist. But then you had Yeshayahu, one of the last kings of Yehuda, who was a tzaddik, and in his times, the Eishta sent the Novi Yumia to bring back many of the people from the Aseres HaShvatim, whoever was willing to return. So at that point, you have most of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael again. Now, in that same year, the 18th year of Yoshiyahu's reign, he decided it's time to renovate the Beis HaMikdash. The last time it had been renovated was 200 odd years earlier, and it was badly in need of renovation. So they're doing all the work, and in the course of that, they found a Sefer Torah. You have different explanations among the Mefarshim, what was so special about that Sefer Torah. Some say that it was Bechlau, it was very rare to find Sefer Torah because Yeshayahu's grandfather Menashe and his father Omen had destroyed all the ones they could get a hold of. Others say that this was the original Sefer Torah that Moshe had written for Shevet Levi and was kept in the Aron Kodesh. Whatever the case, they also the Medrash mentions that they opened it up to a pasuk in the Tochacha in Parshas Kisavai that begins Yoylech Hashem Oischa Ves Malchuch, Hashem will take you and your king into Galus, and that was especially unusual because usually the Sefer Torah is rolled to the beginning. So what's it doing? Rolled all the way to Parshas Kisavai. Anyway, for all these reasons, they told Yeshayahu about it. He was tremendously overwrought about it. He sends his ministers to go ask Chuldah Nevi'ah, what is the Eibishter telling us with this? And she tells him, the Kitzur, yes, there's going to be a Churban, yes, there's going to be a Golos because of the Averus of the Jewish people. However, because you took it seriously and you're trying to get the people to do tshuva, you won't live to see it. You'll pass away in peace before the Churban takes place. Anyway, all that was in the 18th year of Yoshiyahu, which was, it was 36 years before the Churban. And since we're saying here that 14 years after the Churban was a Yovel, then it follows that year was a Yovel as well. So then what you have after that, Yoshiyahu ruled for another 13 years, and then he was killed by Parinichoy. You have the whole story over there where he didn't listen to Yirmiyahu and went out to war against Parinichoy. You have the whole story over there. We have it summarized, by the way, in one of the Kinnis on Tisha B'Av. Then you had three sons and one grandson of his ruled in turn during the next 22 years, and then came the Churban. So then 14 years after that, we're saying it's 50 years, 36 plus 14, since the previous Yovel, and now it would have been a Yovel. It wasn't in practice a Yovel because the Jewish people aren't living in Eretz Yisrael, but it would have been a Yovel, and that's the time when he has this nevuah. So he continues, "B'maris alikim hevi ani al Eretz Yisrael." In a vision of Hashem, he brought me to Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, Rashi says Hashem didn't physically transport him to Eretz Yisrael, but he showed him in a nevuah as if he's in Eretz Yisrael. "V'yinicheni al har gavoya ma'od." He placed me on a very tall mountain. "V'olav k'mivne ir mi negev," and near it. Sometimes the word olav, as we know, means near it, like v'olav matim menashe. There's a built up city. Further on, towards the end of Sefer Yechezkel, after he describes the Beis Hamikdash, Yechezkel goes on to describe how Eretz Yisrael is going to be redivided among the Shvatim, and then there's going to be a strip in the middle which belongs to the Nasi, which means it actually says the Melech HaMashiach, and in it is going to be built the Beis Hamikdash in the city of Yerushalayim and places for the Kohenim and Levim and so forth. And describes over there this actual city is going to be a little bit of a distance further south of the Har HaBayis. Throughout all the time before that, Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, you always had that the Har HaBayis is adjacent to the city. You have even Yechezkel himself mentions in later psukim, he criticizes, sometimes you have the kings are literally right next door, their palaces with all the Averis they do over there are literally right next to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, La'osid Lava, Yechezkel was saying that the city, with everybody who was living there, was going to be some distance away. So therefore, now Yechezkel is seeing that he says that he's al har gavoyam ma'od on a very tall mountain, because you have various other psukim that say that the have in Yeshaya, for example, nochen yehavis Hashem b'roish haharim b'nisahum b'nisam b'dvois, it'll be higher than all the mountains and all the hills. So he's seeing that he's on a very tall mountain, and the city of Yerushalayim you can see somewhere off to the south. It continues, Pasuk Gimel, Vayove Oisi Shama. So Hashem brought me over there in this vision of Nevuah. Vihine Ishmar Ehu Kamarin Choshes. There was a man who had the appearance of copper. So earlier in Sefer Yechezkel, he described that the Chayis HaKodesh looked like that. He described them the same way. But Notitzim, they gleamed in Nechoshes Kol. He says earlier in the Sefer, they gleamed like polished brass. So here also, he sees this Malach who's going to show him around the Beis Mikdash, and he sees him looking like he's made out of brass. There is an explanation, actually. You have, Zohav v'chesed v'nechoshes. Zohav refers to Gvura, kesef to chesed, and nechoshes to tiferes. So therefore, so you have the tiferes is associated with rachamim, and that's where, so therefore, his guide is somebody who embodies rachamim. He has in his hand a linen rope and a measuring stick. So Rashi explains that when it comes to measuring the ground, when you want to measure a distance along the ground, the best thing for it is a linen rope because it doesn't stretch too much. And he also had a measuring stick, which is going to be used to measure things like the thicknesses of walls and the height and width of gates. It's sort of stuff. It explains in a little more detail. He says that the measuring stick is not really so practical for measuring long distances, because what are you going to do? The measuring stick is only so long. You're going to have to measure off, then you're going to have to make a mark where you stop measuring and then put the one next to it. So for that, a rope is much more practical. And also, on the other hand, a rope you can easily use to measure shorter distances as well. You just fold it up. You measure a piece along the rope using the measuring stick. This piece is X number of amos long, and then you can fold it as many times as necessary and be able to measure smaller things. Anyway, Rahu Ahmed Bashar, he's standing in the gate of the third Beis Hamikdash. Vaydaber Eli Ha'ish, the man spoke to me. Ben Adam, he says, son of man, which is it means human, it means mortal. It's the name that Yechezkel was called throughout the Sefer, when Rashi explains near the beginning of the Sefer, because he got to see the Ma'ase Merkava. So therefore, Hashem reminds him that for it, you remember that you were a human being like everybody else. There's many other explanations. Also, it means that he's achieving in the world what Adam, we know that Adam is the highest level of among the names for a person. You have Adam, Ish, Geber, Enish. So it means that he's achieving that level, etc. Anyway, Hashem, the Malach tells him, Re'eva Einecha, look with your eyes, Uvaznecha Shema, listen with your ears, V'sim Libcha, and pay attention with your heart, L'chol Asher Nimara Oisach, to everything that I'm showing you. You were brought here in order to show you the layout of the third Beis Hamikdash. Hagid Eskalasheta Royal of Beis Yisrael, tell everything that you're seeing to the Jewish people that they should also participate in it. First of all, it'll encourage them. They will realize that Golus Bavel was not something forever. You had Jews at that time, for example, who thought that Hashem had thrown them off completely. Chasr Shalom Uriyur Nichezgel, you find such things, and he has to tell them that it's not so. So it'll encourage them. It'll be later on, when Hashem tells him also, Haggad is based in Cyril Saboyas, the Medrash brings over there that Yechezkel asks Hashem, what's the point? The Beis Hamikdash is destroyed anyway. And Hashem says, so what? Because the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, therefore we should just ignore it. You teach them about it, and they'll learn the halachas of it, and it'll be considered as though they built it, which is why we're learning it now during the 3 weeks. There is, by the way, Rashi mentions, brings from Sifri at the end of Parshas Hazinu, when you have the pasuk over there, Vayomer Aleihem, Moshe tells the Jewish people, Simu Levavchem L'chol HaDvarim Asher Anochi Mitzaveh Eskem. So Rashi brings there from Sifri that you have to consider. Here, the Malach is telling Yechezkel how closely he has to pay attention, even though it's right there in front of him, and it's easy enough to understand, relatively speaking, how everything is laid out when you see it. Alachas Kama V'Kama, the Sifri brings, Divrei Torah, where you have tiny little details that make all the difference, how much more so a person has to be very careful, and pay close attention to all the details. By the way, this that we're saying, the truth is, I mean, Yechezkel himself saw it, and I suppose it was easy enough for him to understand. The truth is, the way he wrote it down in the Sefer, there's many details that we actually don't fully understand. Rashi himself mentions later in Perek Mem Beis about a certain detail. He says that everything that I'm describing over here, I didn't have a Rebbe to teach me. I didn't have anybody. All I have is Kemosha Uni Min HaShemayim, as he was shown Beruach HaKodesh, Rashi says. So now the Rambam describes in Hilchos Beis Abchira that when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, and that was Yechezkel was giving Nevuah after the destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash and before the second one is built. By rights, they should have built the second one according to this blueprint, but the Rambam says they didn't quite understand all the details of it, and therefore they had to build mostly according to the blueprint of the first Beis Hamikdash, and they included some details of what Yechezkel describes over here. The Tosfos Yom Tov explains the idea behind it is this description that Yechezkel is going to give us over here is meant for a Beis Hamikdash that's never going to be destroyed, which is the third Beis Hamikdash. Now, if they had been Zoicha, when they came to build the when they came after Golus Bavel, after the 70 years, they would have built that building. We wouldn't be talking about a third Beis Hamikdash. There would have been a second Beis Hamikdash, and it would still be Kayim La'olam, and it would still be existing now. Because they weren't on that level, therefore the Eibishter prevented them from fully understanding everything that's here, and therefore they had to mostly build according to the blueprint of the first Beis Hamikdash. So he starts by describing. Now, the first thing he sees is there's a wall all around the house, all around the Beis Hamikdash, all around. Most of the Mefarshim understand that here we're talking about the wall of the Har HaBayis. Now, he's not going to really give much description of it. And later on, at the end of Perek Mem Beis, he's going to talk about the size of it. The Har HaBayis in the first and second Beis Hamikdash was 500 by 500 amos. The one in the third Beis Hamikdash is going to be 500 by 500 kanim, where we're going to say in a second that a kone is 6 amos. So it's going to be 6 times as long and 6 times as wide, the Har HaBayis of Lasid Lavi. So most of the Mefarshim, Rashi and most of the Mefarshim understand over here that we're talking about the wall around the Har HaBayis. Some of them understand that maybe we're talking about the wall of the Ezras Nushim. Now, one thing is, again, I don't have the big poster to show you yet. If you want to look around over here, I have a handout. Well, this is the second Beis Hamikdash. So the second Beis Hamikdash, that's the thing. The layout of the second Beis Hamikdash, 6 times as long and 6 times as wide. Instead of being 500 amos, it's going to be 500 kanim. We're going to say in a second that a kone is 6 amos. So therefore, it's going to be three.
The sum of each five.
Huh? No, instead of 500 amos, it's going to be 3,000 amos. 3,000 amos long and 3,000 amos wide is going to be the Har HaBayis of Lasid Lavi. So 36 times the area. The Pashtos, I mean, one point is, I mean, you're going to have many more Jews there coming in, and Lahavdil Goyim coming and visiting the Beis Hamikdash. In fact, the Har HaBayis was the furthest, an area within the Har HaBayis, actually the Chel, is the furthest the Goyim are allowed to go. So I guess Balabatish, you could say there needs to be a bigger Har HaBayis for everybody to be able to come. But anyway. No Arabs. the layout of the third Beis Hamikdash is going to be much different than you had in the first and second Batei Mikdash. So I don't know how many people can see it from this distance, but you have like this. In the second Beis Hamikdash, which is what's shown on the Poreichos over here, you have the Ezras Kohanim and the Ezras Yisrael, which is the area within which the Heichel is. And then next to it, you have the Ezras Nushim, which is where you have the four small chambers in the four corners of it. The third Beis Hamikdash, rather, is going to be, you're going to have the Ezras Yisrael and Ezras Kohanim are going to be completely surrounded by the Ezras Nushim. And in fact, the Heichal itself is going to be within the Ezras Nushim, and only the front of it will be facing the Ezras Yisrael and Ezras Kohanim. And the Ezras Nushim, which throughout the description of Yechezkel is going to call it the Chotzer Achitzoina, surrounds that Azara and surrounds the Heichal on all sides. You have the expression in the pasuk, the cave at the soif of Gover, that you have the Eishes Chayla, Teres Baila, and all that. So you're going to have literally the Noshim are going to be surrounding the Anoshim in the third Beis Hamikdash. Anyway, so here again, according to Rashi and most of the Mefarshim, we're talking about over here though. First, the wall of the Har HaBayis. So he says, the man was holding the measuring stick. The length of this measuring stick was 6 amos, where each amma consists of an amma plus a tefach. Meaning, you find in some, usually we're talking about an amma is 6 tefachim, but sometimes you find descriptions of amma of 5 tefachim. Rabbi Yehuda holds that was what we used for the Kalim and the Bis Mikdash. When we get to Bes Hashem, the description of the Mizbeach, we're going to talk about some of the Amos in it are measured in that kind of Amma. So here he's stressing the kind of Amos we're talking about are Amos of full six Tvachim, and then there are six of those in this measuring stick. So it consists of 36 Tvachim. So he measured the thickness of the building, meaning of the wall, is one kona, six of these amos, and the height of the wall is also one kona. Rashi explains, now you have like this, the Mishnah in Midas tells us that the wall on the east side of the Har HaBayis had to be lower, had to be lower than normal, so that when the Kohen is standing on Har HaZeisim and doing the Parah Adruma, he's able to see the door of the Heichal. Otherwise, if the wall was too tall, it would block the view. So here, Rashi is explaining it means the same kind of thing. On the east side, it's low. Other Mefarshim explain it means that it's going to be low on all sides, because this way you'll be able to see the Beis Mikdash. For you only need it really in order to mark off the area. What's the Har HaBayis? You don't really need it for people to not attack or whatever, because there won't be any war at that time. So therefore, it can be low all around. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola, Yud Zayin Tammuz. We know that there's the minhag that Bein HaMetzarim we learn as we just did in Yonei Beis HaBechira, and this is based again on that medrash that we just quoted, that Yechezkel is being shown Tzuras HaBayis, and Hashem tells him, show it to the Jewish people, and Yechezkel says, look, they can't do it anyway, you may as well wait until they get out of Golus, and Hashem says, just because the Jewish people are in Golus, Yehei Binyan Beis Yibotel, learning Torah is as great as building it, and the schar of learning these psukim and being oisik and learning it, I'll consider as though they're taka oisik and binyan HaBayis. Halacha, we were talking about how the Shavuos and Nedarim, a father is able to be made for his daughter's Nedarim until she becomes a Begeres, meaning until she's 12 and a half, and only if she's not married yet, and a husband can be made for his wife's Neder. You say three times Mufer or Bottle or some other Lashon that shows that you're Oiker in the Neder, and it doesn't matter whether you say it in her presence or not, either way it works, but you can't use a Lashon of HaTorah because that belongs to a Beis. You also can do it only b'yom shomay, which means you only have until you only have till tzeis hakachavim of that day.